Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we feature an interview with Don Brinkerhoff, the chairman and founder of Lifescapes International, the gaming industry's leading creator of environmental ornamentation, iconic landscaping, and unforgettable gardens, including the volcano at the Mirage. Whenever a casino operator wants to transform a space into a lush, natural setting featuring trees, plants, and flowers, they only have to make one call: Don Brinkerhoff and Lifescapes International. Brinkerhoff attained international acclaim with his direction of the building of the volcano at the Mirage, one of the most iconic architectural features in the casino industry. He endeared himself to Steve Wynn and has created all the stunning natural settings for Wynn ever since, including the atriums at Bellagio, Wynn, and Encore Las Vegas and Macau, and soon Wynn Cotai. Along the way, he beautified the Las Vegas Strip by lining it with palm trees and other lush surroundings. Today, Lifescapes has projects around the world, in and out of the gaming industry, and remains one of the most sought-after landscaping design companies in the world. Brinkerhoff and his daughter Julie, also the president of the company, sat down with me at Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas in April. Don Brinkerhoff, thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast. We didn't have a chance to sit down when you were named to win the Sarno Award, the recognition for casino design, and I'm glad we're going to get a chance to today.
Great.
Let's talk about how you got into the gaming industry. What was it that... That really started it? Was it the Steve Wynn, the Mirage situation, or did you do
not.
More?
Actually not. It was Saul Kirshner.
Okay.
We did a project in Palm Desert. It was a country club with a lot of lakes and such. And a friend of his that was a professional tennis player from South Africa invited Saul over, and he saw that. And Saul was in the habit of traveling around the world and seeing things and bringing them back to South Africa. And so Julie got a call, and we went over to see him at the Beverly Wilshire on a Friday evening, which I thought was a ridiculous time to go to Beverly Wilshire. But then turns out she was right, and 2 weeks later I was walking around in Johannesburg. And what we worked on first was the first hotel of any kind, let alone casino, was Saul's Cascades Hotel.
Okay.
at Sun City.
Uh-huh.
And I'd always had the idea that you need to make sort of extravagant landscapes in order, because on opening day, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
that was what's important, not 20 years from now.
Right.
And so we did that job and came back to home, but like you say, it was all done with big plant material and big effects and so forth. And I got a call from a friend in Hawaii saying I was going to get a call from Steve Wynn's organization, which at that time was the Golden Nugget.
Right.
And so I went out to see, went over there, and actually was interviewed by Joel Bergman.
Okay.
And he said, well, Steve's out of town. He's closed the deal on Gold Nugget Atlantic City, which they sold to
Bally's.
Bally's.
Right.
And so Steve came back in and said, you got to come and see Steve. Well, I had photographs of the work at South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's well acquainted with Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And so I showed him the photographs. And he said, well... That looks pretty interesting. We're doing this. What we want to do is a tropical hotel. I'll give you some money. Go away and come back in a couple of weeks and show me what you can do. And I says, I don't work that way. I bring my stuff over and I stay a couple of days. And I said, I'll see you in the morning and the middle of the day at the end of the day. And so I'm sure that I do the best I can to capture your vision, not mine. And we worked a couple of days, and then
Brad
Friedmutter. Brad Friedmutter was working for him too. And he said, you know, Steve can't see very well. If you could do a model, that would help. So I called over and had a couple of my guys bring over some foam core and swizzle sticks, and we made palm trees out of some green paper. And we did in one day this little junky model. Mm-hmm. And Steve comes in and looks at it and says, okay, you got the job. And so we went from there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had studied in Spain took a sabbatical when I was in my mid-30s, and we'd gone down to southern Spain to a town called Elche, and they had a palm grove that had been planted by the Arabs 700 years before. Well, if you see one do a tropical job, well, coconut palms don't grow in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, maybe Canary Island date palms would. And we found out that best we can find out they would. And so we started accumulating Canary Island date palms. As a matter of fact, we put them on the site, big nursery. And then I've been doing waterfalls and streams for a long time. So we developed this hill, and there's a waterfall, and then David Hersey, who was consulting with Steve, Steve wanted to do a volcano, and I said, well, okay, we could use this hill as a volcano, and we ran fire, pipes under it. And so everybody told Steve that he was crazy to do this. He borrowed, I think, $650 million from junk bonds through Michael Milken, and well, it turns out he was not crazy. This is the first hotel that had been done on the Strip in 16 years.
Right.
And it was wildly successful. And everybody found out that it was successful. So we kept getting phone calls to doing other casinos.
Right.
And, sort of went from there.
Right. Well, the Mirage was certainly a seminal casino in Las Vegas, changing the way Las Vegas thought about casino resorts.
That's true.
And you also did the interior forest, I guess they called it.
Well, it turns out that I said we can't grow tropical plants outside, Steve. And Michael Bednar, who was working on the interiors at the time, said, well, how about enclosing it? And I said, yeah, because we could grow orchids and all kinds of stuff. As a matter of fact, we all got on one of Steve's airplanes and went back to St. Louis to see a botanical garden that had a dome. And Steve said, we'll do that. And we'll look at you can see the dome from the street, and you can see the trees in it. And he says, if I can get people in my joint, I can get paid back.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went ahead and did that. And then partway through, we had about 40 sort of straight up and down ficus trees in it. And Steve looked at it. This is where the building's all buttoned up. And he says, I don't like them. He says, as a matter of fact, I'm going to write a song, Bye Bye Banyan. and my poor guy that had been working on it, placing these things carefully, just went home and went to bed. And I called Roger up and I says, I don't know what we're going to do, Roger, I'm going to prove Steve right. And that was the instance where they had these artificial palms, which usually were straight.
Right.
And I said, they're just pipes, how come we can't bend them?
Yeah.
Because we wanted to walk in under a cover.
Sure.
So that's what happened. And actually, it made it more spectacular than it would have been otherwise as a consequence of this push. What we found, and certainly Steve fits in with this, he says, I want you to do something, but he doesn't tell you exactly what to do.
Right.
Which leaves you the creative room to do things. And also, we've worked on half a dozen different projects for him, and we've always been out at the limits of our knowledge, stretching to learn more stuff. And this is true with the Mirage. We went from that. We did Treasure Island, and then over did Bellagio.
Right.
And you know, in between, we did work for the other casinos in town. And I don't want to slight them because
sure.
By this time, Joel was on his own, and we did the Paris casino with him. And then ultimately, we did the work at the Venetian for Sheldon. Sheldon Adelson did the Venetian and Palazzo, and then we did some work for Sheldon and Macau as well.
Sure.
And so it's been a continuum.
And of course, you really did the heart of Las Vegas by re-landscaping the Las Vegas Strip, which was just a bare street for many, many years until you did that.
That's what happened there is that Steve's offices were at the Mirage at the time, and I went in to see him. He says, come on, follow me. And I said, okay. So I followed him down around back to some of the meeting rooms. And going to this meeting room, there's this square of tables set up with like a donut. And around that, I recognized someone. Were all the casino representatives of virtually all the casinos in Las Vegas at the time, because I knew some of them. And he sat down. I didn't know what was going on. And Steve says, well, we got to do something about the Strip. Because I think it was Ken Venturi had done a, Learning from Las Vegas book 25 years before. And he said, we got to do something about the Strip. It's a disaster. And he said, I know you other guys must have landscape architects, but your aircraft here is okay. Why don't we use him? And so everybody says, okay. And so we got aerial photographs of the entire Strip, 4.5 miles, so you could see which was your place.
Yeah.
We stood there. We made full-court models of their reader boards at about 1/16th of the inch scale, and we made this model that was in 4-foot sections, and we have trees on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took it over to Cashman Field to show it to everybody.
Right.
We put it up on tables. We'd never seen it together. And it was stretched out to infinity. It was 196 feet long.
Wow.
We had, I think, 250 property owners, or a large number of property owners. And there was no objection. It's all paid for by the property owners along the Las Vegas Boulevard, and it was completed under budget and on time, and it was declared a scenic highway for God's
sakes.
That's
right. Yeah. It really did transform the way the Strip looked. And
one funny thing is that I had this brainstorm that Las Vegas needed a new sign. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so the newspaper came out, California Consultant doesn't like our sign. So when we presented this model, I mean, they were taking votes from just jockeys, and everybody wanted to keep the sign. And this big, tall TV announcer leans down and says, well, you got to keep the sign. I says, the public has spoken. And we certainly are. Now they park, have a parking lot out there. They have weddings.
Right. And that's right.
And they're expanding it again, I understand.
Yeah,
they are.
So, the interesting thing is everybody focused on the sign issue, and nobody focused on the fact we're using water.
Right.
All those other things that probably were more substantial.
Right.
But ultimately, they ended up with basically artificial turf.
Okay.
So.
Well, you mentioned that you really go with the vision of the developer when you come into a property. But overall, the importance of landscaping to a new property, I mean, and even to a refurbished property, I mean, is that often overlooked?
It hasn't been overlooked by us.
Yeah, of course, right. But I mean by the developers.
I do not have a degree in landscape architecture because he had invented that at the school I went to.
Right.
At the time, So my degree is in ornamental horticulture. Mm-hmm. So I have a sort of a bias towards planting anyway.
Right.
And we've always tried to do beautiful gardens, and essentially gardens. And we're not into minimalist architecture. I don't know how to do it. There are people who do it well. But that is so we do gardens, and basically we try to appeal to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is about the customer.
Right.
And to make them comfortable, to create beautiful environments where they can come over here and the advantage to doing any conglomerate where you have a collection of money that a lot of people are providing is they can provide environments that they couldn't possibly afford at home.
Right.
And so that's our effort is to do that. And we've worked on about a dozen hotels on the Strip. All of them, in some respects, are different from one another. We have this major lake that we did in front of Bellagio that worked on with a lot of other people. None of this is a single-handed thing.
Right.
And I mentioned to Steve we should do it. And he says, we've done Dancing Waters. I said, well, I know this company, Wet, and they are unique in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up doing the Bellagio Fountain.
Right, sure.
And then at the Wynn Hotel, we were across the street from the shopping center that had a sort of a space...
The cloud thing.
Vehicle.
And I said, that nobody likes.
I said, that is part of our scene.
Right.
And so, how about we build a mountain there? And after pounding his fist on the table, I'm not going to do it. I think Elaine said, maybe you should reconsider. So not many people would let you build a 100-foot-high mountain.
Right.
Right back of the sidewalk on Las Vegas Strip. And then it's structurally compacted earth, and we lined the planting pockets with plastic so it didn't melt, and we planted a forest of trees. And really, on that instance, you have to walk inside in order to see what's going on.
Right.
Which is different to Bellagio.
Right, he was giving everybody free shows at Bellagio and Mirage. Now they wouldn't necessarily come into his property. Now to see the show, they had to come in.
That's right, and the thing is all about the guest. I mean, I'm focusing on Steve because we're just basically talking about
right.
it. Well, when we worked on Siegfried and Roy's Secret Garden at the Mirage, I think. We built cages for the animals, okay? And I talked to the guy that builds cages, and we went back to see an installation back in Chicago, and it looked like a train wreck. There was wires going everywhere, and I talked to this guy, who was a trapeze artist. As a matter of fact, he's from some Eastern European country where they do that kind of thing, and he said his most proud day was when his father said, "Okay, son, today you're going to catch me." and he said, "Well, we don't have to do all those bracing. All you have to do is do a 10-inch diameter steel pipe and put a flange on the top and some wires." And I says, "How come we never did that before?" He says, "Because nobody ever asked me." But Steve came out and said, "That's great, but it's too hot for my customer." So we came up with a thing, plastic fabric panels with misters and so forth.
Right.
So that the customer comes first. And I think that all of the casinos operators in Las Vegas and other places either have that philosophy or shop.
Right. Now, you've done some work in Macau as well, and China. Is it a different perspective when you do work for the Chinese customer?
No, they're different because they tend to work with committees.
Uh-huh.
Great.
We have about 50 jobs either underway or finished on mainland China, which are mainly residential.
Mm-hmm.
Residential for them is multi-story building, sometimes 40 stories high.
Right.
And they do podiums and parking underneath, and we do gardens on the top.
Mm-hmm.
But the process of getting decisions is different because they really do work on consensus, and it's different process. You don't have a single leader like we do here that mm-hmm. says, okay, do this, okay, do that.
Right.
Everybody's got to be in favor.
Yeah.
But we've done work in Macau primarily for Sheldon Adelson mm-hmm. at the Venetian Day.
Right.
Venetian Four Seasons and a few others. Yeah, we're working on Steve's
right,
project.
In Cotai, right.
In Cotai.
And that's supposed to be a spectacular project.
I think it will be.
Yeah.
I think it will be. I can't really speak about it in detail, but I think it's going to be pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. And you just completed the Baton Rouge L'Auberge, which is a pretty unique property as well for that market.
Yeah, it's, it's one of those things. We've done a number of L'Auberge properties,
mm-hmm.
and they're all on the Mississippi River or
right.
What's that lake?
Lake Charles.
Lake Charles.
Yeah.
And because of the deal down there is you have to be on the water. It doesn't have to be. It comes to Mississippi, but
right.
it doesn't have to be integral.
Right, exactly.
And in the instance there, it's Mississippi River goes by
mm-hmm.
because, we can't dig holes for planting when it's not high tide, but when the
right.
river's up because the water bubbles up.
And you did Beau Rivage as well in Biloxi.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now that was kind of unique. I remember they you put magnolia trees there in the atrium.
Yeah, it didn't work.
It didn't work very well.
It didn't work. the thing is that we're always pushing the envelope, and
right.
sometimes the envelope doesn't open.
But now, how much do you use the fake trees? I mean, the artificial trees that really look great.
We're not very often.
Yeah.
We use the only successful one is the Washington Fan Palm,
uh-huh.
because they use the petioles, the clad, the trunk, and
right.
they embalm the leaves
uh-huh.
and the fronds, and that seems to work pretty good. But other than that, because these are artificial trees outside, artificial plants, the sunlight chews them up.
Mm-hmm.
But we're primarily using real plants,
right? Which of course is the preferable way to go.
It's
really
preferable,
with
the possible exception of the artificial grass, because they make that so believable now.
Right.
That it reduces the maintenance cost, but the problem is it's 20% hotter than the atmosphere.
Yeah, I've walked on some of that before here in Las Vegas.
In some instances that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the industry, the horticulture industry, is constantly evolving. We have found, starting from when we worked on the Mirage, we do that little crude model. We do models on virtually everything
mm-hmm.
because being able to see it in three dimensions is significant, and it's a physical model
right.
preferred over a computer model.
Right.
We build our own models.
Right. Well, what's next for your company? I know you've got a lot of projects in the pipeline here that you're excited about.
Well,
which you can't talk about. Thank
right.
you.
Some of them we can't talk about.
Right.
But it's an ongoing thing. There's mm-hmm. more casino work happening.
Yeah.
There's certainly more work overseas. We have continued to work in China. We have a project in Istanbul right now. We have the prospects of some work in Dubai. We have a philosophy of on foreign work to try to get the money first, because if it's hard to collect here, it's impossible to collect
right.
over there. but we've been successful with that.
Yeah.
But we've worked from South Africa to
Greece.
Saudi Arabia,
Mexico.
And
Yeah.
A little bit of Mexico. We had an office in Bangkok for a while.
So we work in Indonesia.
Yeah. We don't limit ourselves to where we work.
Right.
But we don't treat them differently. One of the things on foreign work, quite often, in China particularly, we take the plans up through sort of an expanded design development level and it's turned over to local people to do the construction documents.
Right.
Because they have to be done in Chinese mainly. But we do follow through with art direction, put their plan, and do the plan.
Well, Don, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It was great to be able to sit down with you and get some of those stories. You've got a million of them, as we said before. You should write a book, for sure.
Yeah, maybe I'll get around to it soon.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.